Episode 197, we creeping on 200 episodes tonight. Friday night, Hella Bass Live. We talk about why co-anglers shouldn't hate front-facing sonar, why they should embrace it, why they should relish it. And it could be a good thing for co-anglers. Listen up. Let me know what you think.
This week, the Hella Bass Bass Fishing Podcast is brought to you by Arsenal Fishing. Arsenal Fishing offers premium custom-made performance apparel and tackle. Arsenal delivers a wide variety of custom-designed baits, accessories, and tools, along with unique utilitarian apparel for all outdoor enthusiasts. As part of their support, you can use code HELLABASS15 to save 15% on all purchases at arsenalfishing.com to support the show. Now let's get back to helping you catch more bass and suck less.
Everybody wants to talk about how co-angler numbers are down and it's all of this thing, and they want to blame it all on front-facing sonar. But I want to kind of flip the narrative and talk about why I think fishing behind somebody with front-facing sonar or somebody that's looking at fish could be a good thing, and why co-anglers should want to do that. And I got somebody with a little bit of experience in that situation coming on tonight, so I'm going to bring on Gabe. What's going on, Gabe?
Not a whole lot, brother. Thanks for having me on. I'm looking forward to a fun conversation about forward-facing sonar and co-angling.
Let the chat begin. So Gabe from the Tin Horse Monty YouTube channel, check it out. He does quite a few videos fishing out of his own boat locally, and he does a lot of tournaments and BFLs and Toyotas and other things, team tournaments and fishing as a co-angler. So he's got plenty of experience on both ends of this conversation. So, that's what we're going to talk about tonight. Tonight's stream is presented by Arsenal Fishing and boosted by Powerhouse Lithium. And, so that's going to be the topic. I know there's already been some chatter. Aaron, I think relish, and we'll talk about that. And maybe we'll talk about pickle relish too, condiments, whatever. So, Gabe, you've been on both sides of this. So you have a tournament boat, a small tournament kind of rig that you fish your local lakes that you've had forward front-facing sonar for like 2 years now, at least, right? Yeah. Maybe three. So you know what it's like to use front-facing sonar in a team tournament solo as well. You've fished with plenty of anglers over the years before front-facing sonar was popular, and you've, in the recent years, I'm sure, fished with plenty of guys that have fished, used their front-facing sonar with different levels, right? From probably everything from like staring at it all day looking at individual fish to just using it to be more accurate and everything in between.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, 100%. Yeah, so a little bit of background real quick. Like Rich said, I got a 16-foot aluminum boat, and that's what I mainly fish out of. I have an old Ranger. I got a 520. It's like an O2 model, but man, I haven't fished out of that in a while, and I need to get it out because it's a sweet boat. It's just sitting there. But I do most of my fishing out of 16-foot aluminum, and I bought LiveScope. Probably you're probably right. It's probably been close to 2 years because time flies. But I've still got the LVS 32, and I've got a 10-inch graph, and so I've got experience looking at that. Fishing around southern. I live in Missouri and Cape Girardeau, but I fish a lot in Illinois. So I'm over there, looking at those fish with that forward facing sonar. And it has become more commonplace. If you're a tournament fisherman and you don't have forward facing sonar, you're kind of just at a disadvantage most of the time. So yeah, as a co-angler in the BFLs, I fish two divisions. I fish the LBL division, which is Kentucky and Barkley Lake, and also fish the Ozark division, which is Lake of the Ozarks, Table Rock, and Truman Lake. Man, everybody's got it, everybody has got it, and people use it differently. It really depends on the lake that you're fishing. Totally different scenarios from lake to lake, from season to season. Pre-spawn, people tend to lean on it quite a bit more than they do in the spawn and the post-spawn. But yeah, it's definitely something that's a hot topic at the moment.
Right. And so I think a lot of people want to talk about how the opens, the BFL, and I don't know about this. So we've definitely seen in the opens, the co-anglers level is going down in the opens. That's been trending that way. The co-anglers from what I understand, in the Great Lakes division up in the upper Mississippi, still pretty strong. I don't know that there's been much fluctuation up or down. What would you say in the two divisions you fish, what's the balance like? Do you see a trend up or down in co-anglers, or what does that look like?
I don't know. I mean, I really don't.
It's not,
I really
significantly don't see... like you didn't see it from go from like, you know, 100 and 100 to like 150 or right. Like,
no, no. Now I know like Del Hollow, some of those lakes, and I fish Table Rock too. And that's a lake where the jig minnow, forward facing sonar over 80 foot of water plays, especially in the, you know, February and March. But I haven't seen a big fall off. There's almost always been, it seems like there's been more boaters than co-anglers. It's always been kind of, it gets like right to the end of the, you know, the cutoff, like to say it's a Saturday tournament, like Thursday. A lot of times Major League Fishing will send out a text, hey, we're six co-anglers short. If you know anybody, send them our way. That's kind of been going on for a while. Now, that's just in the two divisions that I'm fishing. So I can't speak for all over the country.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's never going to be perfect. I know a lot of times in the Great Lakes, I think the river, a lot of guys don't like to run the river. So they're like, oh, I'm going to jump in the BFL because it's safer to fish as a co, and I'll, you know, get to fish lacrosse and not risk my lower unit and prop.
That's not a bad idea.
But the co's in the opens, and a lot of people want to blame front-facing sonar, which could be contributing, because I think there's a stigma that, oh, I don't want to get stuck behind somebody that's just looking at their electronics all day. But I don't think that's the only thing going on, and I don't think that's a good take as a co-angler. To me, if somebody's staring at fish in the zone of the lake, whether they're suspended around brush piles, right, that means you're in a zone of the lake, and if they're seeing fish, like typically if they're fishing there, they're seeing fish, right? So then you're 100% around fish, whether they're suspended, whether they're on brush, whether they're, right, whatever it is, they're using that area. If you're going down a bank behind somebody, you're just assuming there's fish there, right? Like, you could be fishing for three fish on a bank. And if you're, I mean, I'm sure you fish behind guys that are like, they'll flip to the same shoreline bush 17 times before they move to the next one.
Yep.
To me, that would be a much more helpless feeling than being out, even if it feels like the abyss and you don't know what's going on. What is your take on that?
I think you're right. The toughest guy to fish behind, there's a couple scenarios that are really tough. But one is a guy that's throwing a moving bait, like really tight to the bank, like just like square billing or
chatterbait. Riprap, like,
yeah, yeah. Your
rub rail is like hitting the bank as you're going down.
Tough, yeah, man. You got nothing. And then also somebody that's fishing a bluff. I fished a regional on Norfolk Lake like a couple years ago. And the first day I had a good day. We were fishing deep points, kind of a small spotted bass fishery. At that time, that's what we were targeting, spotted bass. And I was in 12th or 13th place after day one. So a 2-day event. The top 12 fish the third day, and then six go to the All American. Mm-hmm. So I was super stoked, man. I'm like, I'm right there. I can see what I need to do, and I had a lot of confidence. Well, day two, I drew, there was a 2-hour fog delay, which sucked right off the bat, but I drew a guy that was fishing bluffs, and he told me in the morning, he's like, it's going to be pretty difficult to catch fish behind me. This is pre forward facing sonar. This guy didn't have forward facing sonar, but what he was doing was the bluff came down to about 10 to 12 feet, and then it went out and there was a ledge and it dropped to like 20, 25, and then it went out and there was a ledge that dropped to 40 and then to 60 into the deep river channel. So he was sitting right, his boat was sitting right on the top of that first drop. So he was targeting those bass that had pulled, that had kind of pulled up and feeding and were just sitting off of that first little drop. And that's where the fish were at. So not only were we tight to the bluff, but I was throwing out in 60 foot of water on the other side of the boat. And so that's another scenario that sucks out of the back of the boat. And like you said, you get somebody that's a flipper, that's really dissecting. He's fishing wood. He's fishing laydowns, brush piles, or maybe buck brush, not so much brush piles, but visible cover that you can see. And he moves really slow and he flips You know, he's flipping outside limbs. He's flipping the first couple forks, and then he's flipping the trunk. He's making 6-7 flips. He may even go from a jig to like a brush hog change up, and then he moves on to the next one. That guy's really hard to fish behind. And then somebody that's spawning, somebody that's bed fish, or not spawning, but I definitely don't want to be in the boat with somebody that's spawning, but somebody that's bed fishing, they're locked down, power pole down, and they're just pitching to the same spot over and over and over. Although sometimes I have caught fish behind those guys, because if there's one spawning here, there's going to be one spawning in the area. So you can just, right. You can just make random pancast.
I think the spawning, actually sight fishing, is a good analogy to somebody scoping. There are typically more fish in the area than you can see with your eyes, and that you will be able to track down with front facing sonar. So from the same thing, it's probably a little easier to be in a spawning flat or a pocket, right? Because, you know, if you're fan casting a Ned or a Senko or something like that, right? Like, if you fish slow enough and fan cast, you're going to put your bait in front of some fish, and you will have some opportunities in the spawning scenario. Unless it's a really unique, like, you know, like a dredged marina where there's like a shelf this wide and the fish are sitting right there or something. Like, if you're in a traditional spawning area, right? So I think, to me, the same thing, if somebody's on a flat or a long tapering point or a deep channel where fish are either, you know, in treetops or suspending or in brush, right? There's other fish in that area, right? So what advice do you have when you've been in that situation? How do you attack that?
Well, so that brings up a good point about a spawn. A lot of people that are fishing for bedding fish tend to fish for the ones that they can see really good. And a lot of times those aren't your bigger fish, but they're not the only fish for sure. It's real common for a lot of beds to be, say you got 5 foot of visibility. So in 5 foot of visibility on a slick day, bluebird skies, you can see 6 foot, you know, pretty good. You can see those little saucers down there. Well, there's a lot of fish in 10 foot that are spawning. So if your boater is locked up on a couple beds and he's pitching to them in 6 foot, I'm going to be targeting that 10 foot, 11 foot, just assuming that somewhere within casting range, there's going to be some spawners that are out there deeper. And a lot of times, you know, that's the better fish. So that's what I would do. And I've been in this scenario. I drew a guy, Kentucky Lake, going out of Paris, and we went south down New Johnsonville area, and he had found a couple bass, couple different groups of bass. And we locked down on one set. It was a male and a female, maybe two males and a female. I can't remember, but they were in between some buck brush, really shallow. And he was up in there far enough to where I couldn't even really cast to the side of the boat because we were in the woods, so to speak. The water was up and we were in there. So my only cast was kind of like at a 45, you know, off the back of the boat. But he locked down for like 25, 30 minutes on those couple fish, never caught one. But I caught two fish out of the back of the boat by him, and he got pissed. He was extremely upset. But I was just casting like a, I think it was like a hardhead or biffle bug or something, and just kind of slow rolling it along the bottom. And there were fish out there spawning in that little
but pocket. Spawning way. Or staging or staging, whatever. Exactly. Cruising. Exactly.
Yeah. So in that situation, you've got, and we'll get into this point a little bit later with the forward facing sonar, but you've got enough time to change techniques and try different things while that guy's locked down. So, I mean, you can fish a jerk bait, you can fish a crank bait, you can drag something around, you can go through a repertoire of baits. And a lot of times you're going to get a bite because they're not fishing for those fish. So that'd be my tip.
To me, that's not that much different than somebody looking at their front facing sonar.
Right. Yeah, I would agree. I think one of the things that's tough for a lot of people is wanting to be throwing close to the bank. You want to be throwing to where you can,
or you want to have a target, really, whether it's a bank or a hump or a point. Right. You want to feel like, you know, and I think that is the mental block there. And I think what we've learned about front facing sonar is there's a lot of fish out roaming that aren't on points. They're not on humps. They're not on a saddle. They're not on a shell bed. They're right there. They're actually floating around out there. So if that person's fishing for those, you know, floaters or roamers, if you're fan casting, and I think you talked about this when you were talking with Panger the other night. If you're communicating with him and he'll at least give you a clue at what depth, right? Yep. Whether they're on the bottom, they're suspended. So you can start to like think about how, what depth you need to fish. Then I think you can treat it kind of like you did when that guy was power pulled down.
Yes, 100%. That communication is key. You know, going with, you got to have the right mindset, especially if you know what you're going to be doing. Especially
it
if
is
you know,
a lot of mindset.
It's a lot sure. of mindset. If you're not going to fish the way you want to fish, a lot of times you're along for the ride, but you just need to suck it up, buttercup, and talk to the guy and say, hey, what are we doing? You find out that we're going to be sitting out in the middle of nowhere over 80 foot, 100 foot of water. He's going to be looking at him on the.
But that's part of the, like using the nomenclature middle of nowhere. That's where the mindset already starts to slip. You feel like you're in the middle of nowhere, but you're actually out there because there's fish there. It's not nowhere. Right. So that's the first thing to like get your head wrapped around that.
Yes. 100%. Yeah, you're exactly right. And then so have that line of communication going first thing in the morning. Don't get up all grumpy. You're like, you know, like all night long, you're like, dang it, I'm going to be out there in the middle of nowhere. You know, don't wake up. Don't roll out of bed with that negative mindset, because it's just going to make things worse. Stay positive. Create some kind of chemistry, communication in the boat. And when you're out there deep off the bank, maybe it's an uncomfortable place for you to be. I'm not uncomfortable because, you know, I like fishing offshore and I kind of have an idea what's going on because I've got that technology in my boat, but a lot of people don't. Like you said, Rich, when we were talking to Banger, ask how deep he's seeing the fish. Where are the bait fish located? Are majority of the fish suspended in 30 feet? Are they down 50? What's going on out there? Is there bait everywhere? Are there just little small bait pods that are kind of moving around? If you're around standing timber, where's the standing timber topping out at? If it's topping out at 10 foot, then you can just throw a regular jerk bait, just a regular 110. If it's down there in 20 foot, you're going to have to weight that jerk bait down, or you got to figure out how long to count your bait down. So you're fishing around the fish and watch where the person's throwing. If he's looking around, and all of a sudden he stops and he starts firing out to the left, you know, there's fish in that area. Well, he sneaks his trolling motor around again and squirrel, you know, he starts casting that out over there. There's still fish over there. So that's a really good spot to start making a cast, you know, just start making fan casts in that area, because you're going to be around fish. And like you said, it is the guy that's out there looking at them. He's seeing fish. So, you know, you're around fish. You just got to figure out how deep they are, and you got to figure out how to trigger them to bite. And that's just a process you have to go through.
And you have to be realistic. Like, you're not, I mean, usually as a co-angler, you're not catching 20, 30 fish a day.
No, right? No, it's tough. For three to five
bites. Yeah, even if he's catching 10 or 20, you're probably still right. So you're going to be less efficient, but you know, you're around fish, you know, and I think there's some things you can do, right? Like, so there's the jerk baits, small swim baits, whether it's a spark shad or a K-Tech or whatever your favorite swimmer is, you know, a 2.8, a 3.3, if you get it in the right depth and you stick with that all day, you're probably going to get some bites. Like, that's a pretty, right? And if they're on the bottom, right? If he's fishing brush piles and you know the fish are on the bottom, right? Then it's a Sea Rig, it's a Ned, it's a Nico. You go with the proven winners that you have confidence in, and you've just fished slower than him, and you just fan cast the areas, because like, they can't hit every little brush pile. For every one of those brush piles, there's a little twig that they didn't see, or a little hard patch, or a little, you know, a couple softball sized rocks that could be whole, you know, they get fish that are pressured on those brush piles, right? They might move off to that more or less obvious stuff and be stuck to the bottom. Those are the fish you can catch.
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of times you're getting a different angle at that piece of hard cover. He's hitting the front. If a guy's just kind of moving down the bank at a slow pace, he's not really just flipping it over and over. If he's just making a few flips and moving down to the next one, he's not getting that backside of that lay down. You know, the lay down's here, he's hitting
brush pile this. Or
yeah. So when the boat gets past, you can flip in behind that stuff. And that's virgin water. You know, whatever fish is sitting on the backside of that, he hasn't seen that bait. So there's ways to play it. I mean, back to what you were talking about the A-rig and stuff. I mean, in February and March in the Ozarks, out of the back of the boat, you could literally just throw an A-rig. It's boring as hell. I mean, I'm tired of an A-rig by then. I've been throwing it all winter long because we got open water here, so we get to fish all year long. But I'm tired of an A-rig, and I'm tired of jerkbait usually by then. I'm wanting to throw like a chatterbait or swim jig or something. But you can literally lock an A-rig in your hand. You could take two if you wanted to, with some with like 2.8 or 3.3s and some with, you know, 3.8s or some spark shads or something a little bit mm-hmm. different. And just throw that sucker all day long, and you'll probably have your opportunities to get five in the boat. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, and I think if they're fishing, you know, suspended fish, a lot of the times those fish are in pods, right, or little schools or pods.
Yeah. Yep.
I think, you know, there's a lot of fish, especially if, I don't know, maybe so much largemouth, but if their spots are smallies, there's probably fish following that one to the boat. And a lot of times the fish are going to hang out under the boat, right? Yep. So. You can do some things like, you know, dropping down under the boat, a Ned rig or a fluke or something. Like, you go to net his fish, go ahead and just drop your bait like behind the motor, you know, go net his fish. And then you come up, you might be surprised sometimes on what's going on.
Yeah, you always want to keep some sort of minnow bait or a Ned rig or something. If you're fishing an Ozark impoundment that's got deep, clear water for sure, and it's that time of year where you're out there off the bank. I fished a tournament at Table Rock in February, BFL, just however long ago that was, a couple months ago. And I only weighed in one keeper, but the keeper that I did catch was in like 25 foot of water. And I just dropped a net over the side because I saw he had left his back graph on and it was 2D, but I kept seeing some kind of interference down there every once in a while. And I'm like, I bet those are spots sitting down underneath the boat here, you know, every once in a while. So I just dropped that D'Amico rig. But like you said, if you're fishing with somebody that's catching fish, spots, small schooling fish, like you said, spots, really spots. I mean, spots are always, it seems like there's always like a really big group of spots. If they're catching those fish and they're pulling them to the boat, they're bringing them to you. They are bringing them to you. That's a golden opportunity. And this is something that I've just learned over the last year about this from fishing with people that have forward facing sonar. Yeah, man, they're bringing the fish to you. You just got to drop down to them and you'll get five if you do that all day long. I mean, it's boring. A lot of times you can't, you know, here's the difference in fun fishing and tournament fishing. And you know this as well as anybody. It's a totally different mindset. Sometimes you can't catch the fish on what you want to catch them on, and how you want to catch them. You got to throw the best bait for that scenario that's going to get you the most bites, because time is limited, especially out of the back of the boat. You don't have a lot of opportunities a lot of times. So you got to be dialed in as much as you can on the situation that you're in and know when to throw a certain bait and when to put that bait down and pick something up. So you got to have, you know, you want to keep it simple, but you want to have the right things in the back mm-hmm. of the boat that are going to apply to every scenario that you're going to run into without getting totally, you know, spun out.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know I had several of my club members that were co's on Leech Lake in our state tournament last year. And this is coming up on the Bassmaster Opens this year. And you're going to see this. Most of the co's were like really excited to draw somebody going for largemouth because they were going to be fishing rice and pads and reeds and emergent vegetation. And the bites were more prevalent there. But some of my co's did catch them. The guys out hunting boulders, you know, the smallmouth. And they just had to be like, they would fan cast, you know, when these fish were, most of the guys that did well in that tournament were keying on specific boulders. And the co's would, when that person was like spot locked or just kind of hanging, looking at that one boulder, the co's would drag neds, they'd throw a little K-Tex, you know, and, you know, maybe once every couple hours, I'd get a bite just random casting, but they paid very close attention to where that boater was fishing. And if they gave up on that boulder, when they went by it, they would flip their ned or whatever tube or drop, whatever they felt their confidence bait was. And whether it was because, you know, the boat got on top of it and it made the fish defensive or it came from a different angle, it was surprising how a boater could sit and cast at that fish for 20 minutes. And then when the boat would turn and do something different, and it was, you know, definitely once the boater wasn't casting over his shoulder or anything, it was definitely like not casting up, but like casting back or to the side of the boat when he would move, surprisingly, they would catch a fair amount of those fish.
Yeah, I think fish, I mean, you can see it with forward facing sonar. You can see it happening. Fish will move. I think they feel pressure on one side of a brush pile and they'll move to the other. They just disappear on the other side of it and you can't see them. You see that? I see that quite a bit. That happens. So that fish could be picking up on transducer noise or whatever. And if it feels like that stuff that's moving on away, they may kind of become more relaxed. And if you're paying attention to where your boater was throwing, you can flip in there. I tell you a story. I fished with Jake Lawrence last year on Kentucky Lake in the BFL Super Tournament. If you guys on here aren't familiar with Jake Lawrence, he's pretty much been dominating on Kentucky Lake. He didn't do that well in the invitationals last week or the week before, but just about everything Toyota else.
Last year.
Yeah, he's won back-to-back Toyotas, several BFLs on Pickwick too. He's a hammer down on Pickwick, but he's really good with the front looker. I mean, he's dialed in on that. So I got to fish behind him. A couple things that I noticed. One was he covers a ton of water. We fish probably 50 or 60 spots. And they're little small spots, little stumps, little baby brush piles. And we were in shallow water. You know, that's been another misconception with forward facing sonar. It's not just for deep water. There's guys that are learning how to master it in really shallow stuff. So we're in like 3 to 7 foot of water. And he's casting in these little small spots. So when you're behind a guy that is covering a lot of water, you really don't have time to make any kind of adjustments. You've kind of got to pick something out that you got confidence in and just kind of cross your fingers. It happens really fast. But one thing that I did, I had one opportunity. I had about a 4 pound smallmouth hooked up, and that opportunity happened like this. There was two brush piles, and a lot of times on Kentucky Lake, anytime you're on the Tennessee River, you're fishing out in the middle of the river. A lot of times it's a wide open area. You might be in 3 or 4 foot of water. They have a lot of bars and stuff. They're like humps, you know. They have shell on top of them and they're just off the side of the river channel for the most part. And these are places where the shad pull up and the fish pull up and feed. There's been a lot of brush that washes up on those little bars, or people will, you know, plant brush piles and stuff. So we fished a lot of that stuff. There was one little bar that we were fishing. He said, "We're only going to be here for probably 5 minutes. There's two small brush piles." Well, he threw at this one brush pile quite a bit, and these fish were suspended. He's throwing a little swim bait over them, catching them like that on spinning gear. So he threw at this fish, and he said, "There's a fish there. I can't get him to bite." Well, he slid up about 10 feet to that next brush pile, and he's casting at that. I was really focusing on kind of looking off in the distance. There was a silo right there. There was a tower off in the distance, and I had a little bit of an idea of about the angle and where he was casting, even though I couldn't see, because obviously it's a 10 foot underwater or 5 foot underwater. I can't remember how deep it was, but after he left that first brush pile alone and slid up to that second brush pile, I knew I probably only had like 2 minutes, because he's making like 4 or 5 casts and we're moving, because he's watching the fish. If they don't respond, he's not messing around with them. That's how he fishes. He covers a lot of water like that.
He's gonna put his bait in front of 100 fish instead of trying to.
Yes, exactly. And I'm trying to fish a shaky head, when I fish a shaky head, I like to soak a shaky head. And there's a in my opinion, that's usually you're gonna get more bites if you can really soak that sucker. But when somebody's moving fast, you can't do it. And there's current. You know, it's the Tennessee River, so there is current. So anyway, we got up to that second brush pile, and I threw my bait out there. Gave it slack, and it drifted in an area, and as I pulled up on it, it was tight. And so I knew I was in some kind of wood, some kind of cover. I'm like, great. I'm around what I need to be around. So about 30 seconds later, I feel a little tick and my line starts moving off, and I just freaking hammered them, because it was 1 o'clock and I'd only had like one bite. I let all my frustration go on this fish and I just jacked him. So I'm fighting this fish. He's got power pose. He's got the brakes on the back. So the power poles are kind of halfway down. They're back behind the motor. And this fish is, you know how smallmouth are. They get nuts. And this fish is digging, coming around the back of the boat. And I'm high sticking him, trying to keep him out of the power poles that are halfway down. And he comes up. We see a pretty nice wide tail, probably like a 5-inch wide tail. So it's a nice quality fish. And he goes back down and he pulls off. That was my only shot at a fish that day. But the point I'm making is, pay attention to where your boater is casting. And when that opportunity arises for you to get that shot, you got to be ready. You know, you can't be, have a Carolina rig 100 yards off the back of the boat and reel it in and reel it in and reel it in, then put your rod down and grab something else and make that cast. It's too late. You got to almost, sometimes you just got to sit on it and wait for, it's kind of like topwater fishing. You know, fish are blowing up in a certain area. You got to sit on it. You got to wait for them to come up, because you could be way out here and they blow up and 5 seconds later, they're back down and you've lost that opportunity. So yeah, just paying attention to where your boater's throwing is a really, really big deal out of the back of the boat.
Absolutely. But so, you know, I think a lot of people, back to your point about like, they want to be able to see, they want to know what they're fishing, but just because a boater side scanned a hump yesterday or earlier in practice and he thinks there's fish there, and just because you know you're casting at a hump, then fish may not be there anymore. True. If they have a front facing sonar, at least you know typically more often than not you're casting or you're in the area where there's fish. You know, you could be going down a sweet looking bank, you could be flipping some sweet looking pads in a river. That doesn't guarantee there's fish anywhere in there. You know what I mean? It's a mindset thing. I think people, and I'm just trying to like, you know, I could take or leave front-facing sonar in tournaments. I did fine without it. I'm learning how to use it now. It's probably working against me in the overall scheme of things of getting caught up to people that have gotten way better at it. But I just think like, you have to think of it in the right mindset that if a person is looking at fish, then you're around fish, which means you are guaranteed to have opportunities. If just because it looks good and feels good and is comfortable for you doesn't mean you're actually around fish, and that doesn't guarantee you anything other than warm and fuzzy feelings.
Oh yeah. Yeah. I would agree with that. I mean, in some tournaments like that tournament with Jake, I zeroed, you know, but I learned a lot. I learned why he is so successful, because he's covering water. He's covering a lot of spots. He knows what he's looking for, and he doesn't get sidetracked. He's going right to the juice. He's not trying to expand his area by starting like 50 yards up the bank or 50 yards below it. He's going right to the high percentage areas. He's making a few casts. He's fishing a bait that he knows the fish will bite if they're going to eat it. I mean, he has total confidence in that bait. So there's no need to switch out a bunch of baits. He's dialed into one technique, and it's just a matter of covering water. And he fished just as hard like the last 30 minutes of the tournament with 18 and a half pounds in the live well as he did the first 10 minutes of the tournament. So yeah, the tournament, as far as me walking across the stage with, you know, 16 pounds and making the day two cut, as far as that goes, it was not successful. But as far as learning why somebody is successful, it was a no-brainer. I mean, I did learn. I already knew the technique he was using. I'd already caught fish on it. I mean, we talked a little bit more about that. And that's another really cool thing. You see Justin Connell, and you see Jacob Wheeler, Drew Gill, Patrick Walters, you name them, all, you know, some of the best at looking at fish. You see them do it on TV or you see them do it on live. It's one thing to see that, but it's another thing to actually be in the boat while it's going down, and you understand that it's a lot more than just them looking at the fish on the graph and casting to it. There's a whole bunch of decisions that are going on in that time frame. It's a total mindset, and it's a discipline. They're very, very disciplined. They work their ass off. That's why they're so good. And that's why everybody that has that technology is not Jacob Wheeler and Dustin Connell. It's because they are very, very disciplined. They're good fishermen. They understand, you know, this is something we talked about. I can't remember who we were talking to. It might have been when I had Jake Lawrence and Drew Gill on a couple of weeks ago, and we talked about like live scope myths, like debunking myths, bass fishing, you know, patterns and stuff that we assume were true with live scope. When we got on the discussion of talking about it, you know, it's common for people to say, look, before we get into this, I'm not anti-live scope and I'm not pro-live scope. It's just something that's out there and I use it. I think it's fun. But my favorite bite is just going down the bank with a spinnerbait or a frog and catching fish and not looking at them.
just let me get that out there. But I do like to get out deep and cast at them with a minnow too and catch them like that. But I can take it or leave it. But there's this adage with forward facing sonar that these guys that are in the elite series, this new crop of elite pros that come up, this rookie class, that they don't, if they didn't have forward facing sonar, they would totally suck. And I really disagree with that. I think that the reason that they're on the elite series is because they have put in the time and they're really, really, really good fishermen. But I think you can use forward facing sonar to learn fish behavior and to learn seasonal patterns. It's kind of like the opposite of what we traditionally thought of, or how we traditionally learned seasonal patterns of fish. You know, we look at a map and we follow the creek channel back into a bay and we look for channel swing points. At least that's how it works around here in the Ozarks and Kentucky Lake and stuff. You know, they really follow the creek channels. And then we would go to the creek channels and eventually put some kind of pattern together. Hopefully somebody that has forward facing sonar may not know about those seasonal migrations, but they just pull up on a point that's got deep water on it and they start catching fish and they're like, huh. And they look at a map and they're like, oh, the water gets deeper right there because the creek channel swings in there. And then they go to another point and they catch fish. They kind of, there's the opportunity to learn kind of backwards. It's not the same way that a lot of us have learned. They learn by seeing, like putting the trolling motor down, seeing fish, catching fish. And then they can look at a map later and try to piece the puzzle together. Like, why were those fish there? But they were already catching the fish first. It wasn't like looking for the right location and then catching the fish. They're catching the fish and learning why that's the right location. So it's a really valuable learning tool. I got kind of sidetracked on that, but it's, I don't know. I think I understand both sides of the whole forward facing sonar deal. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? It's hard to, I don't know. You can go forever on that stuff. It's just interesting. I hate the polarization of it. You know, I hate the polarization on it of it. I think, if you got it in your boat, and you've spent time behind it, you see that it takes a lot of practice. And here's another thing. I think the reason that one of the reasons that a lot of these OG pros, like the vets that are having problems making that transition, is there's a couple of reasons. They've already got a system developed of success. You know, they've been fishing high level tournaments for 15, 20, 30 years. They've developed a game plan. They've got a system that they apply to the different lakes, and it's worked for them in the past. And it still works. It still works. So it's hard for them to push that aside and learn a new way to approach a body of water, because most of these guys that are real successful with forward-facing sonar, they're going and looking for that pattern right off the bat. They're not trying to split things up. You know, they're not thinking square bone down riprap and then going out and looking deep and then going back and forth. It's like they commit to one or the other, which is hard to do. If you've had success doing one thing, it's hard to just completely put all your eggs in the forward facing sonar basket. And the other thing is time. A lot of these younger guys that are coming up, Trey McKinney, for instance, he lives about an hour away in Carbondale. We fish a lot of the same lakes. I've fished tournaments, the Wednesday Nighters on Cedar Lake over there. Trey will show up. He's a young guy. He's really, really good with forward facing sonar. He fishes like 5-6 days a week. He's got a very supportive family that supports his, you know, fishing addiction, and they've done everything to help promote his career. He's got, Rick Cheatham has been his coach, his mentor he's traveled with on the opens. He's just been around all the right scenarios that make somebody that really that good. But the bottom line is he's got the time, no kids. He's not married. He's got the time on the water for years and years and years. And a lot of the pros that have been around for a while, they've got sponsors obligations. They've got wives, they've got kids, all the things that take up time, boat shows. There's so many things that
turkey hunting, college turkey, football,
yeah, hunting, deer hunting.
Exactly. I mean, they don't want it as bad as the young guys. I'll say it, right? Wow. They're not as mad at them as these kids are.
You're exactly right.
These young anglers have the time, they have the desire, And now what I do think front facing sonar is that they have this like burning desire. And when they can spend that 250 days and then use front facing sonar as an information collector, that's just pouring gas on that fire. Right. It's just amplifying the work they're putting into it. And they're catching up and surpassing these guys that either don't have the time or don't want to put in the time anymore at that level.
Yep.
Some,
I agree.
Some of them, it's obligation. Some of them don't want it that bad. They've got comfortable, I think.
I mean, you can take any of the OG guys. I mean, Denny Brower's a prime example. I mean, he's notorious for flipping a jig or flipping a tube or whatever. He's spent thousands and thousands and thousands of hours honing that craft of putting a jig in the tightest of spots. If he would have put that same energy into forward facing sonar, he would be dominating with that same technique. But he's in his 60s. He's not fishing professionally anymore, but you can take whoever, you can plug that name in with whoever is fishing. They don't have the time and the, basically all that time that they had, they invested, and that's why they dominated in that period at, you know, with whatever that specialized skill set was. We're just seeing, it's kind of an evolution shift. There's just a shift of technology. It's kind of, I didn't articulate that well, but it's got back to what you were saying. It's got to do with, the time on the water that the younger guys have versus the more mature.
30 years are not useless. Those 30 years are valuable, but you have to like, you can't rely on it only, right? You have to keep adding to it. And the other guys are adding to it faster, I think.
Yeah. They're putting themselves around, more fish, I think. I mean, they're not, you know, when you go to, if you just take a 100-yard stretch of bank, and you put a spinnerbait in your hand and you go down that bank, you have to make however many hundred casts, probably it needs, let's say 1,000-yard stretch. Let's say the main lake point halfway back into a pretty good size cove, you know, and you're trying to figure out where those fish are at. Are they on the main lake? Are they halfway back, or are they in the back? You know, whatever. To cover that whole stretch to try to figure it out, you're making, let's just say 500 casts. I don't know. We're just spitballing numbers out there. Like 500 casts, and that's going to take an hour, let's say. Somebody that has forward-facing sonar can start at that point and literally commit to just going down and looking on their trolling motor. And if there is a group of fish in a certain section along that 1,000-yard stretch, they're going to find it way, way quicker. They're going to put those, it allows them to put the pieces of the puzzle together a lot quicker. You still have to do the work, though. You have to be dedicated to not getting sidetracked. That's one of my problems. I'll do that kind of stuff for a little bit. But then I'm like, oh, look at that juicy laydown over there. I'm going to slide over there and I'm going to flip a jig about 3 or 4 times in that. And then I'm like, well, maybe they want a spinnerbait. So I'll throw a spinnerbait and then I'll go back out and I'll start going down the bank with, you know, looking with my front looker. And then I'll see something else that looks good. And I'll go over there and flip at it. I think that's the problem that people that have learned to fish more traditional ways versus people that have learned to fish with forward facing sonar have to battle with. They get torn. You get torn between the two. You know, and you're learning. I mean, you are learning either way, but the person that is just totally committed to that forward facing sonar is learning a lot faster. They're breaking down that cove a lot faster, in my opinion.
Yeah. And I think the other thing is they're really good at is even when they're not casting at a fish, whether they're casting at a laydown, a brush pile, a fish, you know, they're following their lure almost every cast. Regardless if they see a fish or not, like Hamner in the classic, I don't think was seeing all of his fish. Some of the fish, he wouldn't see it till he would throw at a piling.
He was drawing them up out of the cover
or something, but the fish would react to his jerkbait and come up. And right. These guys that are really good at it, there are no wasted casts. You hear Drew Gill talk, right? He could be fishing laydowns. He could be fishing, you know, shallow draws and things where fish are in the bottom. We're not necessarily seeing the fish, but if he's throwing a chatterbait, he's watching his chatterbait come back to the boat. If he's throwing a squarebill, he's watching it come back. So if he's not seeing fish respond, or if he starts to see fish follow his bait but don't eat it, then he starts changing, right? Like, versus like, you could still go cover that same bank and you could throw a squarebill on it And you, if you're not watching your square bill on front facing sonar, you don't see the six follows you had that turned away. Yep. That if you would have switched to a lipless or a jerk bait or a chatter bait, that those might have turned into biters.
That's an excellent point. That's an excellent point. We just assume there's no fish in the area. I mean, that could have been, there could have been a 25 pound bag just sitting there that you passed over because you had the wrong color, the wrong action, or you were fishing below those fish. I mean, that happens. Yeah, all
and I think that is a misconception that they think. I think everybody thinks that every time they make a cast, they're throwing at a fish. A lot of times they're throwing at cover or areas where fish are holding tight to the bottom, and they're looking for those fish to like react and show themselves, right? Yep. And then they're paying attention to what is that fish doing? Is it reacting to my bait? Is it not? Then they switch up. They try different things. They're using it as a constant information gathering tool, and they're making adjustments on the water. It's not right. just always looking at, I mean, in the pre-spawn late winter, yes, a lot of it is just, you know, Toledo Bend was definitely a lot of just throwing at blobs. That I, totally. But there are other situations where these guys are using it to pull fish up. And when they see a fish start to track their bait halfway back on a jerk bait, then they start to, you know, change up the cadence of the jerk bait, or they switch the colors, or they, you know, a quieter jerk bait or a noisier jerk bait or whatever it is. I think that's the small stuff. And I think a lot of these guys also are like, I think of Matt Heron and who's the guy from Alabama, the ball of hate, they call him.
Oh, Wes Logan.
Wes Logan. You hear him up on stage. They're already beat. They're like crying about it. And it's like, Matt Heron's like, well, we're leaving Florida. I guess I'll just have to forget everything I've gone fishing and try to learn something in 2 weeks to finish. And it's like, well, I'm definitely not picking you on my fantasy team because like your head state is in the complete, your mental state is completely wrong. Yeah. You're, you know what I mean? Like
you need to have a beer.
It's like players blaming the refs after the game. You know,
yeah.
It's like,
yeah, I mean, you're exactly right, man. And like you can go, let's take forward facing sonar out of this. Here's a scenario. You're side scanning, you find a brush pile, you drop a waypoint on it. You, the next day you come back, you find your waypoint, you line up on it, you cast. Man, it takes a lot of times, it'll take you three or four casts to put it on that brush pile. And then you don't know, are you to the right of that brush pile? Are you just barely tipping the front of it? Are you to the left side of it? Are you all the way deep in it? I mean, that right there is, just take the knowing if there's fish even in the brush pile away, just hitting that cover. You know, when you're looking at that brush pile with that technology, you can see your bait drop right in there, you know? So there's huge advantages of it, but I saw somebody on here talking about some days they hit it really hard and some days they just relax. Yeah, man, there ain't nothing wrong with any of that. If you're not, this is what we're talking about right now is really geared towards tournament fishing. If you're just going out and
we're talking about even like what we're talking about now is tournament fishing at a
high level. Yeah, exactly. The best of the best, you know, the elites. And, but yeah, I mean, it's something that you will learn a lot having it on your boat, but by no means do you necessarily need it unless you're fishing for money. You know, if you're gambling with money, in the fishing arena. Yeah. You really need to have that. In my opinion. Yeah,
but this, the whole, you know, like forgetting everything that I've ever learned, that's just such a bad take, because these guys do know, they're learning these seasonal patterns and where fish set up in a different way. And the thing is, you know, the old school guy, he goes and runs his brush piles and he's inefficient making the casts, right? He's hoping the fish are still there. He probably, you know, he might spend 10 or 15 casts on that brush pile because he's doing it the old way. So a guy that's much more proficient with his sonar mainly only has to pull up and make 3 to 5 casts to either catch that fish or determine that fish isn't there or not catchable, and he moves on. So he may hit, he's fishing the same brush piles. He found those brush piles with his side scan, but because he's using the tool, he's hitting it more times on the first cast. He's seeing if the fish are reacting. He's looking at the fish's behavior to see if he thinks they're even catchable. And he's hitting 3 times as many more brush piles throughout the day. He's actually just taking the old school knowledge and doing it better than those guys.
Yeah. Yeah. Like Darius is on here. I got to jump in the boat with him at Kentucky Lake practicing for the BFL not too long ago. And we fished. He even let me fish in the front of the boat, which is really, really cool. I enjoyed that. But we went down the bank and threw it. We fished, we went spring fishing, you know, we had a really fun time just doing that. And I learned plenty doing it that way. So, man, you do whatever you want. It's just about having fun. And
if pro fishing doesn't want to see it as much, like, I'm all for limiting the technology. And I think Clay's idea of having a list of approved electronics, like, you know, is the 62 approved? Is the NBT approved? Like, Bass should just publish it. And if something new comes out, it can get added to the list next year. And then everybody can know what's approved and what's not approved. And if it's 48 inches or 60 inches. But the thing is, most of these guys are good enough. If they have a 10 inch unit and one front facing sonar unit, they're still going to catch them.
Hey, Aaron.
But at least they'll clean up the optics and make things a little more standard.
Aaron, I promise you, Trey can catch them without it. I just know from him fishing around here with
Aaron, you should definitely go on Gabe's channel and go to his live streams. He needs more interaction as well. So make sure you start hitting Gabe's channel on Tuesday nights on his live streams. Yeah. And you can share your 90% bad takes, and then 10% of the time you have a good take, Aaron.
Yeah. Those guys that are on, like we talked about earlier, the guys that are fishing at the elite level can catch them with or without forward facing sonar. I mean, there's no doubt about it in my mind. Right. Start getting down to high school level and stuff. Maybe not.
Switch gears.
Sure, man.
I think we gave it 50 minutes. We delivered on the thumbnail.
I was just getting started, man.
My thoughts. Well, so we're going to take a 30-second break, and we're going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about pro fishing, ice cream, hot dog condiments, or whatever else we want.
Sounds good.
Are you ready to reel in your next home purchase or refinance? Supreme Lending's Dream Team can help guide you through the entire mortgage process, from pre-qualification to closing. We have a wide variety of home loan programs in our tackle box, including down payment assistance and first-time homebuyer options. You can ask Hella Bass. He trusted us to help finance his home. Contact the Dream Team today by searching Supreme Lending Dream Team or click the link below in the description or scan the QR code on your screen.
You got your own freaking commercial, dude? That's nice. Big time, man. I can't hear you.
Yeah, sorry. I muted myself for the commercial. But thanks to the Dream Team for amplifying, boosting things here. If you guys have anything coming up, refis, want to get a place with a bigger garage, Aaron can definitely help you out. And, you know, maybe you can refi your house and you can get a live scope with it. I don't know. So, but yeah.
Shout out to my buddy Mike Marfell. I saw him on there.
Yeah, I agree, Tom. Ketchup is for kids. Mustard is the correct condiment.
How do you feel about ketchup on fish, like fried fish? No,
I don't really like ketchup on hardly anything. Like, okay, if they're like really bad French fries, I'll use some ketchup sparingly, but I'm just not a big ketchup guy.
I got a buddy of mine. He's a big time barbecue grill. He's been in competitions and stuff. And anyway, we get together like maybe once every, I don't know, 2 months or something, but I had fried fish and I was dipping it in ketchup, and he about kicked me out of the restaurant. He was extremely upset that I would waste fish by dipping it in ketchup. Like, I don't know. I mean, I don't know. I guess I just grew up with ketchup. It does drown out the taste, though, for sure.
I might try some ice cream after the stream. I got some rigging. I'm gonna go fishing tomorrow. Like, legitimately chase bass for the first time this year tomorrow.
Really? First time?
Yeah. Nice.
Where are you going?
Probably the Mississippi River, one of the pools not too far from the house. So I'm fishing the Bass Nation qualifier, like the 8th, 9th, and 10th, or 7th, 8th, and 9th, or something like that, on lacrosse, but it's off limits right now. So I'm going to go to the river local pool and just start getting my head back in the river frame and where are the fish on this pool, where are they headed, and, you know, just start thinking about that kind of stuff, start getting the chatterbaits and the flat-sided crankbaits and lipless and jerkbaits, start to get that stuff tuned up and get ready to head down there.
Heck yeah, man. Get in fishing shape. You get your boat back?
I got that around Valentine's Day. But okay. I only had it out for about 3-4 hours, just goofing around, trying to chase some crappies when the water temps were still in like the low to mid-40s a couple weeks ago. But so this will be the first get after them day.
I like Sam's comment down there.
It's good to know.
It's good stuff.
JP is, I think most people are not. Here's a fun one. My neighbor Bill, who's been in several of my videos, his wife likes really well done steak, like just scorched earth steak, and then she puts sour cream on it.
Huh. Interesting. I've never heard that. You ever heard of chili on cinnamon rolls?
Yeah, from down like in Kansas your area, I've heard of it. Yeah.
We got into discussion one night on that.
Have you tried it?
No, I haven't tried it. I forgot about it. It was on my mind for like a week, and then the time has passed. But now I'm thinking about it again. So maybe I'll go.
I'm pretty sure AJ's in here. He's had cinnamon roll, and I think they just eat them together. I don't think they
dip the cinnamon roll in the chili. Maybe
they might a little bit, but it's not like grilled cheese and toast where you're just, or like grilled cheese and tomato soup where you're just like slathering it. I don't think that's the vibe.
Okay. Yeah. I could kind of see how it would complement each other, you know? I mean, sweet and salty in a way, because chili's loaded with salt. I don't know. I'll try it sometime. I just forgot about it. I also do the ketchup with the tartar sauce. It's like probably a pack of tartar sauce with like two ketchups to kind of dilute the sweetness out of it. I don't know. A lot of people use this like vinegar and like hot sauce
on fish, you're saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the vinegar is more of like a UK thing. Fish and chips, like the UK fish and chips, they're much like they do a vinegar on their fish and french fries. I think the hot sauce is more like a southern Cajun thing.
Yeah it's kind of popular around here.
Aaron, I think the 90-minute penalty for I think what they determined on that on Trey is that it was an inadvertent snow wake or no wake. Like they don't. So then they just put them in the penalty box. If they think there's intention to actually like game the system or like blow an awake to make a wait or weigh in or something, then they would typically will DQ. Then they say that if they feel like you were intentionally doing it, then they say it's a safety violation. You typically lose that day. Catch. If it's an inadvertent, then typically they do a penalty box, and I think that is pretty consistent with what they've done in the past.
Yeah,
although I think 90 minutes is more than some people have gotten. So
if you were trying to create an unfair advantage or some form of an advantage over your competitors, that's a different type of rules violation, I think.
Right, like the guys that agreed to do it in a pact in the MLF event, they got banned for a year down those canals down in Florida. Oh.
Yeah, was that the one where somebody had a wreck, that boat wreck?
Was yeah, it? There yeah. You go. Clay's giving you the secret recipe here.
Okay, three parts ketchup, one part mayo, and some pepper. All right, I'll check it. I'll try it out. I think I'm probably going to have fish tomorrow, Clay. Appreciate it. I'll let you know. Yeah.
Ooh, mustard and Tabasco bath. So that's like you're saying before you put the coating on it, mustard and Tabasco. So using that as your binder for your batter. I've heard of mustard being used as a binder. So that's just be like a spicy mustard. That makes sense.
I do put if I have like if I'm making a really fat ham sandwich for the boat, I'll put mustard and mayonnaise on both sides, you know, top and bottom, and then two pieces of cheese and like three pieces of ham in there. But that's the only time I use mustard is when I'm making like a sandwich.
See, I use mustard on so my boat sandwiches are typically always mustard with no mayo because mustard doesn't go bad. If your cooler doesn't start, if you forget to throw in the cooler, you let it sit on the deck. Like nice. Mustard is very shelf stable. So it's a very safe. Also, I don't walk 400 miles a week for my job. So I don't need extra calories from mayo. I like mayo. I just try to avoid it.
Yeah. Yeah. I understand.
I'm not a postal carrier. So I don't get as many steps in.
It's true, man. Although I tell you what, when I used to walk about 12 or 13 miles a day, and then when I got on a mounted route, which is what I'm currently on now. So
I wish it was a horse and not a truck. That would sound way cooler. I wish mounted meant you were riding a horse, but I know you're not. You're just in one of those little white trucks.
Yeah, that would be old, really old school. Man. Yeah. So they call it a mounted because you're just staying in the truck, pulling up, flipping the lid open on the mailbox and throwing it in there. But I didn't change my diet. So I, like I said, I was walking 12 miles and then I went to nothing and I gained like 20 pounds, like within 6 months. So I had to like tweak my diet.
You start putting the Mountain Dew down. You can't drink Mountain Dew all day in the truck.
Yes. I mean, I could eat anything I wanted at that point. Cause you know, I'm a lot younger too. So your metabolism is higher, but I was burning a lot of calories back in the day. I'm feeling it now though. So here's something. And I kind of brought this up the other night, when we were talking with Panger. Trey McKinney, that just came up. He also was fishing in
the lock,
right? And there's been rumblings about them making rules about not fishing in the locks now because it brought so much attention. So he's three tournaments in his rookie season. And it's kind of a Ken Duke question too. Has there ever been another elite angler that three tournaments in has a potential rule that's going to be named after him if they do implement that? I mean, it could be the Trey McKinney rule.
Yeah, I'm sure there has, but it's probably not since the 60s or 70s, right? I'm sure like back then it would have been like everybody's second or third tournament. So like,
yeah, that's true. Probably had something to do with like smoking cigarettes,
no whiskey in the boat. You know, put a raised platform on his boat, and when the first time he used a chainsaw to cut through somewhere, sinking brush, 2 days before the tournament. Now you got to do it 30 days before our tournament, you know, like all those kind of things.
Yeah. Well, we got to have perimeters, like back to what we were kind of talking about the electronics and stuff. There's got to be perimeters on that stuff sometimes. So it just keeps getting out of control, further out of control.
Yeah. Roland Martin was allegedly, you know, baiting brush piles before the tournament, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Flooding the boat. Is that against the rule? I don't know.
Didn't Menendez do that?
Flooding your boat is against the rules.
That was Randy. Okay. Yeah. I don't know. I'm not sure about that. I know Dion told a story on our live stream one time about his dad Guido was a guy down at Lake of the Ozarks, and they used to they'd take Alpo or whatever canned dog food and put it around the brush piles to draw the crawfish in, and then they would, of course, he had the Guido bug, which was a really popular bait back then, but he would take his clients out and set them up with the Guido bug on a little ball head jig or whatever, and they'd catch the crap out of them, and he'd just sell like 20 packs of Guido bugs. So he was, you know, he was getting the guide client money and then also selling baits on the side. So he had a little system. But yeah, there's a lot of people that would do that, bait brush piles before a tournament. Lake of the Ozarks, man.
We caught a lot of fish on Guido bugs up here, and we did not throw dog food in the water.
They're still a good bait, especially.
Honestly, like they were really like a Ned. They had almost no action.
Exactly right. Exactly right. It's like the salt crawl.
Yeah, they,
like
they went to the random boat draw instead of the pre-assigned boat draw because of Dudley.
Oh, I don't know that one.
Yeah, so that was the Florida. So back, this was like pre-elites, during like the invitationals, you would know your boat draw for the entire season. Like you would know that... day one, tournament one, your boat 17. Day two, right, your boat 38. And then the next tournament, your boat 78. And then your 90s. Like, they just, it was like a schedule. You kind of knew it the whole year. So there was a tournament in Florida that he realized in practice was going to be a bed fishing tournament. And he had, like, boat 198 out of 200. So he went the last day, last afternoon or last day of practice, and tried to catch as many bedfish as he possibly could. Defensive.
Playing defense.
Yeah.
That's funny.
People were not happy about that.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Now, it wasn't against the rules. He didn't get disqualified
Why did he talk about that? Why did he tell anybody that he was doing that?
I don't know.
Did people just see
him? You think about Dudley and the... Do you remember David Dudley in the 2000s? He was like a
chatty cat.
I mean, he was always talking, like always spouting off.
Huh. Wow. What's up, Jermaine?
McInnes was big mad. Yeah.
I'd be mad too.
I did order. Have you heard about the? I love when they put .com orders and put a giant sticker over the bait so you can't see it.
The nice big barcode.
Yeah.
What is that?
This is the comeback shad.
The comeback
shad. This is supposedly the comeback of that BPS swimmer that like Kennedy and Takahiro and those guys made. That sticker is really on there. So I ordered a map chip with my Cabela's points. So then I was like, I'm going to see what this bad boy is all about. So this is that old, or this is supposed to be the reincarnation of that old BPS swimmer. I haven't fished it yet, but the old one, you had to, it only fished at one speed and it was like ultra slow and you had to creep it. And it was really finicky to fish, but in the right situations, you know, it was supposed to be pretty deadly. I think even maybe this might have been what Rubanus was throwing this a little bit on Amistad in that tournament way back when.
Looks good, man. Looks really good.
Some of their other colors don't look that great. I thought this was a good looking color.
Yeah.
Some of the other ones, Clay, look like the old ones. Let me see if I can find the colors on.
Stick out any, does it got a magnet in the belly? Or you got a, does it got a magnet or do you got to stick the hook in the belly?
No, that's just a dangling. You'd have to like jam it in or let it hook free or put a toothpick or do something. Yeah. So let me share this up. So the white one is white. But like there's the rainbow trout. Not the greatest looking color.
Yeah, okay. You're right.
This is the one I got, the ghost shad. Yeah. There's their pro shad. Threadfin maybe that one will look better in person. I don't know.
Yeah, because the one you got looks better in person, I think.
There's white and then sexy gizzard. I don't know. Maybe it's the photography, but that does not look good.
No.
It looks like a bullhead with a chartreuse line on it.
Yeah, that's pretty rough. I mean, maybe like 20 years ago, that might look good.
But the people that have seen them in the store, do the colors look better in the store or online? I have some Yozuri rattling vibes. I don't know if they're OG. Kennedy still has some of the OGs, but I think he doesn't like the colors he has.
Have you found that cold shad?
Gene Jensen has you looking for gillies. I think gillies are in a lot of clearance bins.
Yeah, they aren't. Yeah, I think so. I've seen them. I think it seems like Baitworks had some in the clearance thing not too long ago.
I was going to say, let me check the.
I'm sure Omnia does too.
I was going to say, they might be in the Omnia discount. Was it G-I?
L-L-E-Y-S. Oh, well, that's how Sam's spelling it. I don't know.
Yeah, so I got two of those. Those are the only colors I bought. I was not a fan. Like, I didn't, like, for me, for whatever reason, I've bought like those bluegill style profile swim baits in the past, and I've never thought they were that good.
Mm-hmm. How long is that?
This one?
Seven inches maybe?
That's like a six, maybe. It's like a probably six right on the dot.
Okay.
It's but smaller than. I would say it's even got a smaller profile than a 6-inch mag. I got a mag draft over here I can grab for reference.
Because I think a mag draft's pretty thin, you know, pretty small profile.
Yeah, like if you've never thrown a mag draft, they seem kind of big, but once you've thrown it and caught 14 inches, that's about the same size, I would say.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So.
So you can catch anything on that early.
Yeah.
I haven't bought anything from Bass Pro or Cabela's Clay in a long time either. It's
there's the yeah, the gilly is definitely marked down. Just certain sizes, it looks like they've only got just two colors. The 5-inch, two of the colors in the 5-inch are in the clearance bin, otherwise the rest of them are regular price. There's all kinds of gillies on Omnia. People want to, I don't know what you're, Sam, if you're looking for them, Omnia's got a whole bunch of them. The bigger ones. And you can use the code, since you asked, Sam. There's the code on the bottom of the screen. If you want to save 15% at Omnia, you can grab some gillies and save yourself some money and help the channels.
That's a crazy code now.
Yeah, they've made it a little, you can't just predict the code every
week. Yeah. It used to be really easy, whatever month it is. And just
now you got to go look in the video description if you need it, Gabe.
That seems like a champion, 86 champion, though, or something like a Dobbins rod number almost. Like 886C.
Yeah. I drove by Cabela's twice the other day and didn't stop. You haven't got your replacement coal shed. I use for all my fishing expenses, I keep them all on the same card for tax purposes. So it's a Cabela's card. So I always have points. So they had a Lake Master chip for where I wanted it. And I had enough points to use it. And I was like, well, I'm shopping, I'll grab a couple of these.
Yeah. Man, that's good. That's working smarter, not harder. I mean, I got one card I'll go ahead.
I was gonna say Skater said he tried the new Chatter Bomb and the knot kept breaking. He was wondering if there was a burr or something on the I've got some. I haven't thrown them yet. Might try them tomorrow.
What is the Chatter Bomb?
Chatter Bomb using up it's the Z-Mant licensed XPS Bass Pro chatterbait.
Okay, gotcha.
It's like a $7 or $8 chatterbait that seems pretty lit. You're looking for the Zoom Unitoad? AJ threw one when I was fishing with him. I was not all that impressed with the Unitoad's action when AJ threw it, so I haven't. It looks like they've got the Unitoad in stock at Omnia. Bilski, if you need some. Looks like they got all the colors. Well, at least these colors, all in stock.
Huh.
There you go. Grab some from Omnia.
So it's like a horny-tailed body with a boot tail? Single boot tail?
Yeah. Basically? Yep. Yep.
Interesting. I haven't seen that yet.
Yeah. AJ was fishing with it last June.
Is it still, it's still a design to throw on top with a, you know, with a big
EWG? Okay.
I thought
it says surface dwelling action.
Okay. Yeah, I've been throwing that Spro frog. I mean, I used to throw that Stanley top toad. That was really popular around here. And then that Spro came out with that bootleg toad.
And now they've fixed it with the internal weight.
Right. It's a good one, man. If you guys are on there and you haven't checked that out, definitely grab it. Cause you can, it floats too. It's not like a toad where if you stop it, it sinks. It'll sit up. So you can, it's just more versatile than just a traditional toad, in my opinion.
Yeah. Carol, if you can get pre-storm warts, like I showed in my video for $5, I would buy them. Yes. If you don't want them, you could sell them for at least 10 bucks a piece and save some for yourselves.
All day long. You could sell them in the middle of the desert for $10 a piece. There's no water around.
AJ says he thinks he needs a weighted hook. It rides too high to thump on a regular hook when he tried it.
Okay. That makes sense. That's what, like that top toe, the Stanley top toe, it's got a little bit of weight on the shaft to kind of suck it down to make it gurgle.
Yeah. The new Shields are pretty cool stores. They're, I don't know, up here, up like in North Dakota and outstate Minnesota, there's still some of the old Shields, which are I mean, they're like average, but the new ones are pretty legit stores.
Is that just a northern chain for the most part, or how far south do
you think they have down in Texas? And I think there's one getting put in Omaha or Nebraska.
Okay.
They're like in the center of the country, I think.
Okay.
More up here, like Wisconsin, Minnesota, Dakotas have more, but there are some others. Dallas has one.
Who's so there's a couple of Elite Pros that are working with them, right?
Josh Douglas and Schlopper.
Schlopper, yeah. That's how I heard about them, is the Schlopper.
So the other thing that's new.
Dang.
Finally got a logo made.
I like it. It's been a while. I know you were talking about that like several years ago, getting a logo made.
I finally got around to it.
Good things take time. That's nice. You got any decals or anything yet?
That's what that is. That's just a...
I mean, like, to get to sell, or is it just personal use? Really? Okay.
No. I typically... oh, boy. I'll typically send them to channel members for free. So if somebody wants them, let me know. Otherwise, should I give away? I give away a 3-pack of stickers. No Satch Squat story required. I'll give away... pack of stickers, but I do have them. I didn't have a good way to disperse them, but I did start a shop. Needs some this is in the works. Like, this is very rough still.
Like a merch shop? Oh, okay.
Yeah, like a fourth wall shop.
Wow.
So I came up with a t-shirt design.
Okay. Gray, man, everybody likes gray, black.
Yeah, I like gray because, like, I don't black gets too hot at times. Gray goes with everything.
Yeah,
it's a dark enough gray that doesn't show it when you get, you know, bang and fish slime and, you know,
and the black and black and red pops on it too. It's a good background color for that.
So
is that what kind of?
I like how this guy's like the ideal fishing shirt model for sure. He's my. By definitely my demographic.
Yeah. Is that like a 50-50 blend or what's
it?
All cotton.
So this, it has the deep here's like there's see. Yeah, so this one is, so the dark heather is a 65-35.
Okay.
The sport gray is 98-18. The other solid colors, which I don't have up yet or didn't do, are 100% cotton. I don't know.
You got your own hashtag too. It's nice. Shout out to Aaron there.
What's your opinion on fishing boat docks? Do you think boat docks should fish boat docks?
Oh yeah. I think that's hilarious. He's got a big house too, man. We fished out in front of it on a Table Rock like a couple months ago. He has a big house, and then he has a really big house that he's building. Yeah, he's doing fine, man.
Would you say he's your best guest you ever had on your stream or not?
No. It was short. We're going to have him back sometime, though.
Did you ever talk to him again? Was he like, I was just busy, I wasn't in the right mood, or was he like...
Yeah, no. Well, because he was in the middle of fishing that, I think it was a Toyota series on Grand. So he had just been practicing all day, and he was on his way to probably do his tackle or go eat or something. And he was just passing through, but... he's going to come on sometime again, but no, we didn't really talk much about it. He's a busy man. He's a really busy man. He's not a big.
He should have more time now. He can't fish BFLs or Toyotas or things.
I know.
Maybe you could get him to come on and give away a hat.
That would be good. That's a really good idea.
So I'm working on. I actually ordered one of these to see what it's like. So I'll have it in a week or two. But I do have it set up where you can get one of each sticker, 3 stickers for $3. I'm not really making much money on it, but it's a way I can distribute them. So.
What's the other one? Visor Gang?
Yeah. So there's, this is my, so AJ came up with this one.
That's cool.
The first time. And then AJ came up with this one.
Right.
fitting.
So this one will only be, this will be a limited run. After this year, we won't make this sticker again. But there's no better options out there, so you might as well write it in. That's what I say.
Sign the back of that too, if somebody.
It's a sticker, sure. I mean,
maybe they want to use it. They want to hold on to it.
Just buy two then.
Good call.
And then this was designed by Arsenal Customs. I hired to have some, so I got a series of logos and things to do things with.
It's cool. It's hard to come up with a logo that you like. The right font and the right, I don't know, coloring.
Yeah. So I got them. I'm not sure. Yeah. So if you guys want a 3-pack sticker pack, $3, you get one of each. I made it about as cheap as possible.
That's a good deal. That's a steal. That's a really good deal. How big are those? Like 2x4 or something? Or
yeah. So this one I think is like a 3x2. This is the biggest one.
Okay.
This is like 1.5x2, and then this one's like 3x1.5. So they're like good for tackle boxes. Good for tumblers, windshields. You know, they're not like
right.
You know,
they're big enough to say I care, but not so big that you're like a stalker fan guy or something.
Yeah. So, right. I mean, we could make bigger ones if people really wanted them. I just didn't think people really wanted. So that's what's new. Going to fish tomorrow. Timberwolves tip off game 3 in about 8 minutes.
You got something scheduled for, was it Sunday?
Good point. I do have a stream scheduled for Sunday, which is the Intune Marine Demo Day. So the dealership where I bought my boat, they do it. This is their 4th annual Demo Day. They do it at Lake Minnetonka at Lord Fletcher's like the last Sunday in April. And they bring out like 15, 20 boats. And they're not just dealer. Some of them are dealer boats, but most of them are like staff boats. Oh, like, okay. So last year I brought my boat and I did test drives. So they'll have a plethora of boats, but I'm going to live stream the event and kind of cover it for those that can't come in person. But you can call ahead or you can just show up. So basically from like 10 to 3, but they have, let's see, 10 Vexus boats that will be there, all available. So everything from the aluminum bass boat to the aluminum multi-species to the glass multi-species to the glass bass boats. They'll have that new brand new VX S20, the new one that just came out. They'll have 5 different Phoenixes, everything from an 819 to the new 21XE. They've got 2 multi-species Camus and a 21 and 20 foot Camus. And then they got 2 Sylvan pontoons.
Oh yeah.
So you can go out and ride any of those for free with the people that own the boats. They have free food. There'll be a bunch of like local tournament anglers like myself. Sam Sobey will be there. If you come, I'll give away some stickers. I'll bring plenty of stickers for anybody that comes up and says hi. So yeah, it's a cool event. And you can just come up. The other thing is, like, even if you don't really want to test drive, you can come up and it's a great place to see, you know, 10 bass boats from 19 foot to 21 all lined up and they're all tournament rigged. So you can kind of like, hey, this is how this person does 2 graphs up front. And this is how this person mounts 3 graphs. And this is how this person, you know, mounts a 360 with a front facing front, you know, or like there's just, you can open up their battery compartments. You can see how they, you know what I mean? Like you can really learn a lot about like boats and rigging and then just everything's open to look at. So it's a really cool event.
I like that. Vexus, Camus and Phoenix. That's nice. It's a nice little family there.
Yeah. So, yeah, sign up or just show up. Lord Fletcher's, if you're within an hour or two, I think it's definitely worth the drive. I'll work on a Hellebass visor eventually. I don't know if I just want to make a visor or if I will make hats that can be convertible. And then you can have your choice of converting them, or I'll cut them, or we'll figure it out.
Yeah, I know you did that one giveaway. You customized a hat into a visor for one of the lucky.
I do need to cut. I did get a new powerhouse hat, but I have not converted yet. So I still have to redo this one for myself.
Yeah. Do you have a certain tool that you use, or is it just scissors? Or you have like a certain X-Acto knife, or?
Huh. Just an Arsenal Battle Braid scissors.
Okay. Interesting.
So if you're like, if you've never done it before, I suggest using a
template,
like using kind of a trace or a template to kind of eyeball it. But if you've done a few, should we just do one live?
Yeah, let's do it, man.
You can just kind of eye it up.
It's like rigging a swim bait. Once you've done it a couple of times, just go and get it done.
Yeah. Just kind of like rigging that Ned.
Yeah. So if you go too short, it's
the key. If you're going to go wrong, leave it long.
Yeah.
And you can always come back and balance it out. If you go too short, it's hard to add material back.
Yes. I thought then you'd have like a summer visor and then a winter visor, like the long one to be winter.
Like,
nailed it.
Pretty good at it.
Yeah.
Cool, that's way too tight. Can't use that many holes. All right, there's the new powerhouse.
Just like that. It took maybe a minute.
All right, so we'll give away a 3-pack of stickers and what's left of this powerhouse. Yeah. The powerhouse Yamaka. let's see. Gotta make sure we pick the right one. What should the hat? You want to pick a hashtag?
Yeah. Hashtag Camus. Slamus.
We could have went Slamus, but we went.
Keep it simple.
Oh. There you go. Hashtag Camus. If you want a 3-pack of the stickers and the powerhouse lithium Yamaha.
I like that.
I finally figured out your partial hat remnant in the. I thought it was in your tackle box. Now it's in the Tahoe. Not members only. This is open for everybody. If members want stickers, they can just send me a message and I'll send them stickers.
Tom, you got to put the hashtag in front of Camus.
Yeah. It's important. Need a hashtag like Jermaine. See, tackle tote in the Tahoe. There we go.
Do you have anything that you carry around with you in your boat? Like it's a, not necessarily like a good luck charm or superstitious.
So type by you, are you talking about like a full like this now? These can work. These are like one of the few that actually would fit my head and not look really weird.
Yeah, that's how our mailman hats are. They're really tall like that.
This is one I got in my 2014 Lake Monroe, Indiana regional. The first time I made Bass Nation Nationals. This is kind of a
like something Linder would wear. You got a you still got the cardboard in it too.
Yeah, it's still got. It's the old Milwaukee.
That's kind of cool. Like
they used to actually sponsor the Bass Nation. They did it for like 1 year. So
it's a good bar hopping hat, man. When you go out in the town with your boys, nobody saw that coming. They're like, "Where'd you get that at?" Way back, pocket full of OG wiggle warts and the Milwaukee's best.
Like hat. The Ozark sucks on a bed fishing tournament. You don't like weaving your boat in between docks to find beds.
That is something that we left out. That's a tough scenario.
Yeah, that hat is older than Trey McKinney.
That's true.
Gabe, would you wear an FBT hat to a BFL?
Somebody did it, I think, this last Kentucky Lake tournament. I would, man. I mean that's I'm not like that. I don't wear stuff on my sleeves like that.
Would you wear an FBD hat anywhere?
No.
No. Did anything happen? Did they get like reprimanded, or like did he wear it across the stage? Like,
I don't remember. I just remember hearing somebody saying that they saw somebody with it. Somebody went across the stage too at the invitationals and talked about fishing boat docks. I do remember that. That was the Kentucky Lake Invitational.
Yeah, but I mean that's.
Yeah, but I mean, it's that. I don't know if he was legitimately fishing boat docks or if he was.
That's what I mean. You can't really pin a guy for that because that's like deny. Like, I mean, there is boat docks on Kentucky and Barkley, right? Like,
there is. There
bass is. Have been caught off boat docks on
100%. There. Yes, exactly, and that's why he did it because. You know, he could say that.
Only 14 people want to be entered for the stickers and the. Oh, well. Come only on. 14 are in. That's fine. The odds are good for those that want it. We'll give it four more minutes. About
making have fishing roadbeds. Stew on that for a minute. But yeah, it's not gonna happen. At least by the hand of me.
I do think Boyd comes across as the villain in this situation.
Yeah. I do have a Boyd. I won a Boyd Duckett reel a couple years ago because we were boat number 13 in the BFL and we got it's like the lucky 13th prize. It's
actually like a booby prize. You like
it's all right. I throw my big, like the burritos and the big, the Chad Shads on it. It's got a bigger handle. I don't use it that much, but I think it was like $169 reel.
That could be it. Everybody saw that Carol got in the drawing and they decided not to enter. That's probably what happened.
Yeah, she snipes a lot of the giveaways.
You gotta watch on 1.25 speed when you're behind. Tomorrow, probably a little bit of both, probably more largemouth, but when I go down to lacrosse, I'll definitely keep typically if you're gonna win. In April and May on the Mississippi River, you typically need brown fish. So definitely, I need to establish a pattern of at least largemouth that I can make the top 20 and make the nationals. But then we'll definitely want to expand and try to find some smallmouth to try to knock Cade Loffenberg off his high and mighty throne. So.
He's the guy to beat up there, huh? Or one of the guys.
Yeah.
Somebody's asking about
Galaxy. That's because we're both northern guys. So if you watch that on a faster speed, then it sounds really fast.
Yeah.
That's really... But when you're watching like Bateman or Tacklecraft, you can watch that 1.25 or 1.5. It doesn't even seem that fast because they talk so slow.
Yeah. Somebody was asking about Kentucky Lake. I saw, like.
Yeah, I missed that. Oh, just there, Gators.
Yeah, if you were to pick a week to fish Kentucky Lake this fall, man.
Oh, last week?
Tennessee River is tough in the fall, man. It is tough. That's what I mean. I would
pick the TVA.
When's the winter solstice? Is like December 21st. I would pick the first week in December, probably. No, I honestly, like, once it gets towards the end of November, it starts getting a little bit better, but it can be really tough on Kentucky Lake in the fall. So I would go as late as possible.
Or go there last week when they were smashing smallies.
Oh yeah. That lake's coming back. I mean, it's amazing. It took 20, the Jetta Marine tournament, which was the week before the last BFL, it took 27 pounds of smallies to win. Second place was 24. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's pretty stout.
I am aware of Bill Alexander and his mutant fleas. I actually had talked to Ed Cowan about possibly having Bill on, but never went anywhere. So, all right. Looks like everybody that wants to be in is in. So we're going to. a lot of stuff. 2x is too fast. I listen to a lot of stuff on 1.25 and 1.5. 2x is too much. All right, we're drawing this. 5% chance if you're in. 1 in 20.
Good odds.
Worky. I feel like Worky was one of the last ones to get in. Worky, send me a Facebook or an Instagram message or an email at rich@richlingren.com. So.
Congratulations.
So send me a note, mailing address. We'll get it out probably next week. Poor photography. All right. Congrats. So, well, I wasn't going to go real late tonight because I got to get stuff put away in the boat because my boat is not ready for tomorrow. So,
I know how that is.
Yeah, for sure. I'll let Bill know if you're, I know he's working on his super sneaky Senkos that last 100 fish. So, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, he's got like a mesh molded into them so that you can like wacky rig them and they don't.
Huh. That's cool. That's a good idea.
I actually have, I used to like melt my own worms and I took, because most of those molds are two part aluminum. So I just took a piece of electrical tape, like thin electrical tape, like a 3/8 or a 1/2 inch. Laid it across that egg sac of the mold where I'd put a wacky hook or that midpoint and then mold it over it. And then I would just trim it. It actually worked pretty good.
Yeah. It's a really good idea. I've had problems with, Rapala has that. I think it's, maybe it's VMC. They got the little bands that.
The cross rings.
Yeah. You can hook it Neko or, you know, regular. You got to get the right size. I guess I got a bunch of the wrong size, but my worm kept sliding out of that thing and I kind of gave up on it.
Just get the Arsenal bands. They're way cheaper.
Yeah, I know. I do need to pick some of those up. That's right now. That's the bait to be thrown around here. You can catch the crap out of them on that wacky rig right now.
I'm not a fan of the cross. I think they're too, well, A, they're like 50 cents a piece.
Yeah.
And these bands are like 10 cents a piece.
Yeah.
These are clear. I don't know. I just think I much prefer those. So.
And you got to buy that stupid tool.
Yeah. I mean, I have the tool for the Arsenal. But what I found is like, I want to say like a 7mm. Fits really well if you use a tool, but if I buy the 8mm, I can just slide it on there. Nice. So,
but does the worm?
Tacklecraft also has 3 billion of those bands. He'll give you a good deal on them. So,
okay. Yeah, I don't need 3 billion of them. I could probably make my own too out of like surgical tubing.
He's got them. I want to say he's got them pretty. Let me see. Let's pull up the old Tacklecraft. I think he's got them like buy one get three free or something crazy.
He's selling them like single cigarettes.
Do you still have them on his? Where are they? Terminal tackle. Yeah, here we go. Buy one, get three free. He doesn't have the pliers. You can get the Arsenal pliers, but you can buy 4 packs. So you get 100 of them for $6.75.
Yeah. It's like almost a lifetime supply.
I mean, I don't know. Depends how much you wacky rig.
Well, is it a one and done? How long will that worm last with that band on there? I mean, 20 fish maybe?
Possibly. I mean, I wouldn't say that's like the norm, but then you could get this shirt, your scope or die shirt. Or does he have this? He used to have this Bet Rather Dead Than Ned shirt. I don't know if he still has that.
Hey, whatever they're biting on.
It's just a fun shirt. Yeah, there we go.
That's awesome. I like it. It's great. It's on sale too.
There you go. There you go, Frank. What's up, our Canadian friend? Only like 3 more months and your season opens, Frank. Didn't know TK had a store. Where have you been, Clay? Maine, you filthy netter. But cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Gabe. Appreciate it. If you guys, if you enjoy my live streams and you're looking for a Tuesday night live stream, Gabe's pretty consistent about going on Tuesday night, the Tin Horse Monty. He also puts out way more tournament videos because he's way more diligent about getting his videos edited than I am. Although I do have one edited in the can for next week. So, yeah, check out. I did put some links in the description if anybody wants to check those out.
Hey, did you hear about the Big Bass Bash stream that we had? I think it was 2 weeks ago. So do you know about the Big Bass Bash? You may not.
When you had Dion on?
Yeah, we talked about that. Yeah, exactly. So
yeah.
So the Big Bass Bash is a $100,000 for whoever catches the biggest bass. And it's a 2-day event. You know, they've got it's a big thing. Anyway, you guys can research. We'll go on and on about it. But we all guessed Dion and Big Al McAuliffe, who is the MC for Big Bass Bash and Anglers in Action. We all guessed what we thought would be the winning bass, the $100,000 fish. They guessed a couple. I think Dion guessed, I had it written down. Dion guessed like 8.25 pounds and Al guessed like 8 pounds. I guess 7.63, and that's what it was. It was 7.63. I mean,
and you win nothing for that.
Nothing. Yeah. I went out to eat. I went and took myself out to eat Mexican Wednesday night. Taco Wednesday or whatever. But yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool. Thought I'd take the opportunity to gloat slightly at the very end of your live stream. I do appreciate that. Yeah. So yeah, thanks for having me on, man.
Watch one of Gabe's videos and tell him congrats on picking that fish's weight.
Yeah. Just make me feel good, you know, a little sympathy.
Yep. Well, if you came in late, I think there was some good discussion up on the front. I think we had some good tips. If you find yourself in a position fishing as a co, whether it's a coing front facing sonar or not, Gabe gives some good advice on fishing as a co. So check the replay, whether it's on MP3, YouTube, Facebook, wherever you're watching. And I'm gonna get the boat ready. And as always, here to help you guys catch more big bass and suck less.
Thanks.
As always, thanks to all of you that hung in till the end of this podcast. This has been another episode of Hellebass Bass Fishing Podcast Experience. Please consider sharing this with any of your bassin buddies and friends. This is the best way for podcasts to grow is through word of mouth. Also, don't forget to search Hellebass on Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, or just about anywhere else so that we can connect in more ways. As always, here to help you catch more bass and suck less.